Hello, and welcome to another episode of EQCast. I'm your host, Christy Pritchard. Thanks so much for joining us on this unconventional sideshow of healing and self-betterment. This is where you can find unscripted conversations with authentic humans sharing their trials and triumphs around their emotional wellness journey. We keep it light, but we can get dark, so fasten your seatbelts. Joining us today, I'd like to welcome a very talented writer currently in the psychedelic sector, Taylor Gavinchuk.
Hi, everyone.
Taylor is a freelance journalist, and in previous years, he's written for Vice magazine, covered events such as Shambhala Music Festival and Pemberton Music Festival. Currently, he writes about clinical trials, company research, investing, and capitalism within the psychedelics industry. So great to have you here. I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anytime. So at the end of the episode, we're going to touch into the investment part of the industry. But for now, I'd like to kind of grapple your own personal path with it. Do you want to guide us through your journey and how you got to where you're at now on an emotional and business level? That cool?
Sure. So I guess business wise, I went to BCIT for like web design and marketing and ended up starting my own cannabis investment blog. And that allowed me to travel and build a really cool lifestyle. And then through that, I took the Vice approach to it. Like, I didn't want to get really technical with the writing and just wanted to be kind of funny and sarcastic. And that's kind of what I bring into my writing now. A lot of that, you know, type of content is really targeted towards rich old people. And it's like the site that I work for and all of my writing, I try to target it more towards like younger people. And I talk about my own experiences with psychedelics, with mental health, some of the failures of the provincial health system and how I've gone through alternative measures.
Yeah. Your article in equity.guru, I think, is that the name of the site? Yeah. On your own personal journey with PTSD.
Yeah. And yeah, to segue onto the more emotional side, I haven't used psychedelics actually in like 10 years now. But when I was a teenager, I used them a lot, especially mushrooms. And I think that I know that they helped me out. I can't really prove it like clinical wise. I'm just kind of
opened your mind a little bit more.
Yeah. I grew up in a really small town, really kind of limited, you know, worldview and perspective from family and friends and stuff. And so I think doing psychedelics, I probably first started age 17, 18. Mm-hmm. And I think between like probably 18 to 20, had like 15 to 20 psychedelic trips. Yeah. A bunch of them were at Shambhala. Funny enough, you mentioned Shambhala. I had awesome. a few maybe overwhelming trips to Shambhala.
It's a very stimulated environment. So I don't blame you. Yeah.
But all in all, very good experiences with psychedelics. And now I find it fascinating to write about, and I can integrate my own therapy and stuff in it as well. I have complete, you know, journalistic and editorial control, so I can print whatever I want. And there's lots of stuff happening in this space, which is really interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. It is expanding and growing beyond my scope of even being able to keep up with it, but slowly but surely. And thank you to some of your articles too, broaden my spectrum of what's happening, which is pretty cool. And so on an emotional and personal level, what transpired the path into testing out about more psychedelics again? And what was your journey with talk therapy?
I think a lot of it bridged off of being in cannabis for like 2 or 3 years, because a lot of the attention shifted from cannabis to psychedelics. It was kind of the nature of it. It's like, okay, we got cannabis done in Canada. And most of these, you know, most of the stuff that I follow is happening in Canada. I mean, some of these companies are in the US or in the Netherlands / everyone's going to Jamaica right now, but mostly it's in Canada. And so a really similar bill got put forward actually, that the same kind of bill that got cannabis legalized in Canada is being put forward for psychedelics.
Yeah. For psilocybin specifically, isn't it too? And ketamine.
Yeah. It's Dr. Yeah. Bruce Tobin from Pharmacil, I think, or Stericil. I always get those two mixed up.
Okay.
Respect to that dude. But yeah, no, it's fascinating. And then as I've been writing, I've also throughout the pandemic started therapy, and it's not really, I guess it is talk therapy in a sense, but it's more somatic experiencing. So
I meant talk therapy didn't work for you.
Like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't quite leading enough, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I went through the provincial system and they gave me a really like dumb diagnosis. They didn't even give me a diagnosis. They told me like what they think it was. And I've done research into that, and they've given like two of my other friends almost the exact same diagnosis without like really knowing my story or really knowing what I was about, and just kind of gave me this like oh, you have this, and like, this is the therapy that you're going
to throw some medicine at you, probably medicine, quote unquote. I mean, some pharmaceuticals, exactly. I should call it. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't get far enough into it for them to diagnose me with anything. So I'd actually luckily didn't get medication.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I've researched, you know, SSRIs and antidepressants. And I know people have been on them and it obviously works for some people, but it is just something I didn't really want to go into.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. There's other options. And if there are other options, they're worth looking into, especially if side effects from non-natural, those options are going to wreak havoc on our body. It's good to check out to see what's available out there before diving into anything. So good on you for that. And so now, where are you at with your emotional level? And are you trying out psychedelics? Are you actually, are you just doing the investment side of it right now? Or are you partaking?
Yeah, I'm not taking psychedelics. Just I have a really long family history of mental illness, of addiction. So I have to be really careful. When I was in my teenage years, I was just like kind of DIY doing it. And yeah. Nothing really bad happened, but I'm still, now that I've researched it a lot more and I know more about like adverse effects that can happen with certain family histories, it's kind of made me apprehensive towards it. But it's something that I'm not putting off the table. And if I was going to do something, it would be psilocybin because I've done it previously.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been chewing on that for the last couple of years. I was sober and, you know, 12 step for a while. And, you know, you're not supposed to really do anything outside of, like an ayahuasca. I was in South America and I was like chewing on doing an ayahuasca trip. This was like 2018, 2019. And was like, oh no, that's a relapse. I can't do that. I got to put my hand up at the thing if I go back. And I don't know. It was like
a lot of pride around that. Or what do you think that was? Or also the understanding, because even with ayahuasca, especially with ayahuasca, actually, if you have a history of family mental illness, but if you're also on medication, but you weren't, but like, it can be dangerous to do things if you have already some.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd ever had that thought of like, oh, would that be a relapse if I did that? Or is like, is that a drug that would be considered a relapse? I had never really like thought of that before. And then
what do they consider? Have you asked them like what they think?
I've asked some people in AA and it's like, it's kind of a split. Like some people are like, no, that's cool. And other people are like, oh no, you'd be right back to square one. And
gotcha. That's so strange. It's plants. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a gray area, but I would say like, obviously without naming names or anything, like it is a growing topic within like 12 step circles is like, well, if I do this 3-day ayahuasca trip, is that better or worse than, I don't know, like smoking cigarettes and drinking like 9 cups of coffee a day and watching porn 3 times a day.
Right.
Like, these are all things that I could go to the meeting and be fine. And everyone would, you know, clap their hands if I got my sobriety chip. But if I did like a 3-day ayahuasca retreat in Colombia or Peru and was like, you know, did everything else properly, then would I still be like an addict? Like,
which would probably nullify those other things, you know, depending on their experience. It could try and it could negate their smoking. It could get rid of their porn addiction. So it's kind of bizarre how that would be considered a no-no when it could help all the other addictions, the transference.
And actually, like the most interesting thing ever that is like not really talked, not, it's not really allowed to be talked about in AA is that Bill Wilson, the founder, did a ton of LSD with Aldous Huxley in the 60s. It's like,
oh, yeah, with Aldous Huxley. He was
it's well documented.
When I was a kid. Awesome.
And he even said, like, Bill Wilson even said, like, after doing these trips with Aldous Huxley, I realized that like LSD could be a really strong catalyst for people struggling with step 3, which step 3 is, you know, finding a higher power.
Ah, right.
And so, but like in kind of like 12 step circles, like you can't really, that's not really talked about. Like if you went to a meeting and just like went up to the podium and was like, yeah, I've been reading about Bill Wilson doing acid. And like,
what would they say to that?
The air would be sucked out of the room.
Like I don't understand. How did his translation from what benefited him get so lost within the system? What happened there? Do you know?
Well, they have these like, you know, the AA Big Book was written in 1939, I think it was completed. And then the 12 and 12 was written in like the 50s. And so they don't want to really change the documents that much. Like they've done 4 revisions, I think, of the Big Book. But I don't know. I think they don't really want to like integrate with newer therapies because it will dilute what they already have. But that raises a lot of questions, in my opinion, because the court orders people to go to like AA or 12 step. Like it's a de facto place where people go for addiction in terms of drunk driving or stuff like that. But if you're dealing with a lot of trauma, for example, to the point where you can't really even talk about your issues, like if you have something that's called alexithymia, which happens in like really extreme PTSD cases, for example, if you go to like somewhere like AA and maybe you go to a meeting where there's 250 people and it's like, hey, you're the new guy, go up and talk. Like, yeah. It might not be the best solution. So I think there's a lot, and that's, you know, not to take away from the 12 steps, like they've helped me and they've helped a lot of people out, but I do think that there are opportunities for some kind of integration with something that's been updated since the 30s.
You know? Yeah, definitely. I 100% concur. And psilocybin and psychedelic therapy might just be that thing. I don't know. I know quite a few friends who've dabbled in it, not with alcohol addiction per se, but with other issues within their addictive personnel. And I haven't quite dove into it myself, but I've watched it help others. So I'm just on the precipice of an ayahuasca ceremony myself this fall, and I'm scared and excited. And you never know what's going to come out of this. And I'm sure I will document to my listeners after I'm done. And if you decide to go ahead with anything too, I'd love to have you check back in and we can find out the before and afters versus AA versus other therapies. I'd be super interested. So how do you think on a macro scale this industry will have an effect on mental and emotional health, like down the line for people recovering from not only PTSD, but even more minor traumas, like what's considered little traumas? What do you think the scope is there?
Yeah, well, even talking about alcoholism, you know, there are a few companies that are targeting alcohol addiction with psilocybin. One of the companies is actually called Cybin, and they've got a few phase 1 and phase 2 clinical trials on psilocybin itself. So the kind of timeline they're thinking is like 2023, and Compass Pathways is also testing psilocybin, and they're, I think, moving into phase 3.
Amazing.
I think pretty soon. So once that passes, like once the phase 3 trials are done for psilocybin, I think it will really open up. Like once it's FDA approved, like the whole, I think a lot of people, maybe skeptics in the medical community, government bodies will be forced to look at it more, and the investment side can get kind of ugly. But at the same time, all that money going into the industry, it does change the way the government approaches it, which is what we saw in cannabis in Canada. So it is like a catch-22. But I think like ketamine clinics are massive right now.
And do we have those in Canada, or are they?
We do. There's a Field Trip, I would say, is probably the biggest in Canada, I think. And they're going to be expanding. They're also in the US. They're going to be expanding pretty big. Novamind has a bunch in Utah. Braxia Scientific has a couple. Like they're only here and there. Like they're not super mainstream yet. But a lot of these clinics are doing like $1 to $2 million in revenue a year just for like a small clinic. So they're getting tons of people coming in, obviously.
Yeah.
And even during COVID, when you know people were staying at home, their walk-in traffic didn't decrease that much. And with everyone's mental state in the pandemic, like depression, anxiety, PTSD, you know, all going up. It's kind of assumed that those locations will continue to be popular because the pandemic has kind of pushed the acceleration on a lot of the mental health, you know, issues and mental health crisis. So
it really
there's tons of room for it to expand and to hopefully take a chunk out of the antidepressant market and the just kind of the old methods of doing things.
Yeah, the very outdated methods of doing things. Do you yourself personally have any experience with ketamine therapy?
No, I don't. I don't have any experience with like psychedelic therapy, only like psychedelic DIY kind of
Maybe I should have asked that question. Do you have any experience with ketamine DIY?
No, actually. I saw too many people like on ketamine when I was like partying I haven't done like really any like psychedelics for like 10 years, just, you know, sobriety sake. But so, yeah, I mean, in my part, I'm sure it has like a lot of good uses in it.
It does clinically. I'm not sure like how positive the uses are when I watch it being done recreationally, but I wasn't sure if you had any personal experience in that. And so to bridge the gap between just it as a therapy and for the investment standpoint, how are you looking at everything as an investor yourself? And where do you write about these things as well? We can touch on that too.
Sure. So I write for a site called Equity Guru. And it's more of like a, maybe not millennial approach, but like younger person investor approach. Like it's not caked with numbers and weird graphs and stuff, hard to understand. I think the ketamine clinic thing is, from a money standpoint, is really interesting. Like just the amount of revenue that they're doing. And it's a brick and mortar business. Like it's not sexy and digital and online or whatever, but
Not yet anyways, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, and these companies are doing telehealth, and that actually is an interesting topic too, is like, well, would it be ethical to have people like do ketamine like on a Zoom call with a therapist? And so it's like that opens up another kind of interesting conversation that hasn't really happened yet, but I think it could. Yeah. And that could potentially take power away from the companies who do have clinics. That's something to keep a watch. That's like a risk factor, I guess, in that.
Yeah, that is kind of it. I don't know. From what I've seen, recreational use, that seems like it would be a tad risky. But hey,
exactly,
if they have a way to monitor and have maybe like.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because the FDA approved this nasal spray called, which is a ketamine derivative. So that's what they're using in a lot of the clinics.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they would, I don't know how like people would get that either, because that's another interesting thing with like psychedelics is a lot of the stuff now are like psychedelic derivatives, like psilocybin derivatives, ketamine derivatives.
Is that a loophole, do you think? Or is that just the best quality that you can possibly get?
It's a bit of both, because like for clinical trials, they need it to be synthetic because different mushrooms could have different potencies. So like some like psilocin and psilocybin has three things inside of it. So I know psilocin's one and there's two other ones. They can have different amounts of those, so I can throw it off. Like, so they need it for like labs, but I mean, it is a bit of a loophole in the sense that like it's allowed companies to have psychedelic clinics with like ketamine clinics, but not actually give them like actual ketamine. It's like a derivative of it. It's kind of like stevia with sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still like, it still gives the effect. So, I mean,
right. Win-win, I guess. And, you know, as long as it's getting passed through the right doors that it needs to get to in order to help people. And as long as it's coming from the natural source, I personally don't see any problem with that. I just want people to have emotional health. So that's the main thing when it comes to that. And so for back to the investment thing a little bit, so are there companies that you personally are really keeping an eye on?
The one I mentioned, Cybin, is really interesting. I'm so like, I kind of built my not fame, but I built my following and kind of reputation as being somebody who like looks for like bad companies or like scam companies. So I'm really like critical on, I don't just like see a company and get excited. Like I really kind of dive in and go deep on them.
Yeah.
Cybin's really good. I mean, they look really good. I think Novamind's really interesting. They've got like 10 ketamine clinics in Utah, and I'm probably going to expand into Canada as well. Field Trip is really interesting. And MindMed, they're doing LSD in like phase, I think they're phase two right now with LSD. So once they complete phase three, it might take longer than mushrooms, but you could see potentially LSD also kind of being maybe
coming
like
back into the scene. Cause LSD was around in the scene far before pharmaceuticals were. Like
Michael Pollan's got a really good book, How to Change Your Mind, where he kind of talks about just how, a lot of these medicines have just like been in the cabinet for the last 40 years. And a lot of the research is there. Like Pfizer actually invented ketamine. I don't know if people know that.
No,
like,
I didn't know.
Pfizer invented ketamine in like the 60s. And so, and you know, MDMA was used in therapy all the way up until like 1984. Like Rick Doblin, the founder of MAPS, like 1985.
It was like marriage counseling therapy. MDMA was used
in like Washington, D.C., like banging on Congress's door to try to re-legalize MDMA because the Nixon administration and then following administrations just did everything in their power to make every like party drug illegal and Schedule One, even cannabis was Schedule One, which is crazy.
We get so off track, human race. Jeez. Well, we're back on track. I guess that's all that really matters. Everything's falling into place and probably in a more regulated standpoint, which, you know, is beneficial now, because you never know if people really take it next level, what could happen if it wasn't regulated.
Yeah. You know? That's one of the fears that the big companies have, but I'm skeptical about their fear because like, they don't want decriminalization because they're like, oh, well, then it's going to lead to this like unlawless,
deregulated.
You know,
yeah.
But I think it's more like it affects their business plan because if everyone is getting like their own supply or whatever, then it takes power away from them and them being able to say, look, we're going to have this brand and we'll be the leaders because all of these companies want to be first.
Right.
And some of them are really legit. Like some of them have like literally raised like, you know, $100 million and are putting it into clinical trials, which would be impossible otherwise. Like who else is going to fund that? I mean, MAPS can't raise more than $1 or $2 million. And a phase three clinical trial is like tens of millions of dollars. So it's almost like a necessary evil.
Yeah.
But I just hope that like the companies that do win out aren't super sketchy. You know?
Yeah. Not the dodgy ones. We need the,
like in cannabis, some really dodgy people won and it's just,
and that's like, kind of what threw the whole industry off. Even
it's
from
like,
an
and I reported on that for like 3 years. So that's, it was brutal, but anyways,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And let's just hope that we've learned from mistakes previous, but I don't know. It depends on who's won passing all the stuff. And that's what we have to kind of keep an eye on when things do start moving forward is like, hey, who is benefiting from this the most and will it benefit us in the end to on an investment standpoint anyways. I mean, clearly emotionally and mental health wise, I think it'll benefit all of us, but just for investing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for like kind of that ethical thing, like it's, I would say, look at the companies who are putting their money into clinical trials, not into like marketing campaigns or like, oh, we're going to be in Jamaica and we're, it's like, whatever. Like
they're focused on the people and the product rather than this is how we look. Excellent. Awesome. Well, that is a wealth of knowledge. I'm super glad that you have so much of it. I don't actually, everyone that I know has the other end. Everyone that I talk to, they have the experimental side of it and definitely not just the logistics side of it. So it's very interesting to get the other end for sure. So I really appreciate you divulging all that you know. It's really cool. Was there anything else that you, that we wanted to touch on today?
I guess in terms of like people ask me, like I travel quite a bit. I did Asia for a year. I did South America for like half a year. I would just really recommend blogging and content creation. Like if you're looking for a different kind of career path, you know, or whatever. So many companies nowadays are advertising for content managers, content editors, content. It's shift, like the whole marketplace, I think, has shifted away from like advertisement and like PPC ads and Facebook ads and Google ads. Nowadays, like people are hiring good content. So I just,
going like back into the other way. That's super strange. I did
it's
not
flipping
know that.
Because an ad is only going to be good for like, as long as you push money into it. Right. But like something that's organic, like an organic piece of content, like 5 years later could be found. And if it's ever, you know, evergreen, then it's still going to be relevant. So it's a really good field to be in right now. I mean, I have like 10 years of experience in it, but I think even just getting started in it is, it's totally where I think marketing is going.
Do you do any consulting? Because it sounds like you know a lot about it. You totally should. I would be your first client for sure. I would love to get out more and create some more content.
I mean, on my blog, like I did it all DIY when I had it. Like I was just posting on Reddit and Facebook. I was getting like 5,000 visitors a day, like right off the bat.
Holy, I didn't realize blogs had that much traffic anymore. I figured it had moved out of that area.
No, it's just like learning headlines, learning images, like taking that Vice approach and applying it to an industry that didn't have a Vice kind of voice in it yet. Yeah. So it was like being different. And yeah, just kind of, I had probably 10 failed businesses before that, trying to sell stuff online in Thailand, like just always trying to figure something out, and then just blogging just naturally kind of happens. So
awesome. Yeah. And that's, I don't know, I've tried also online businesses as well, because I do not like being tied down. I do not like all way too much structure. So this kind of fell into me personally, but blogging is something that
I haven't been in an office in
has like appealed to me too.
5 years.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's been about 10 for me actually.
Oh, wow.
The same. Nice. Yeah. It's been a while. And I went to university for business, so I could be in an office. That was kind of the dream. I wanted like a big fancy advertising job, but then I realized how soulless it all was. And I'm like, screw this. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
I lasted 3 months and then bought a plane ticket to Vietnam. I was like, awesome. I can't handle this.
Like I'm out. Peace. Yeah. Right on. Well, I hope you get to travel again soon with everything that's going on. Have you looked into the potentials of you going overseas again, and what does that look like with our current climate in the pandemic?
Yeah, I would stay in our time zone. It's just a lot easier dealing with like clients and people and stuff.
I mean, for that, for sure. I meant like with pandemic wise, like, is it possible even to travel? I haven't bothered looking into it because
I mean, some places, like I was in Colombia. I love Colombia, but I mean, it's a really bad situation there with increased cases and deaths and protests and stuff. So I think it's more about like Mexico, you know, has a really bad cartel. I mean, they've had a really bad cartel war for a while, but really now it's really peaking. But I've been to Mexico like 6 times. I love it down there.
Nice.
Practicing my Spanish. So that's potentially a possibility. Just have to be smart when you go.
Yeah.
Know where to go kind of thing, but nothing like concrete, but you know, sniffing it out a bit.
Open. Yeah. Got to sniff it out. I'm just going to lay low until everything kind of blows over. That's my approach to this right now. It's a little intense. So I'm just going to hang out. Well, I think we touched on a lot of things. Do you want to highlight your blog? I'll put them in the show notes too. But if there's any other of your businesses that you want to drop down, give her.
No, just check me out at Equity Guru. I try to write almost every day, you know, putting stuff out. Awesome. I don't have Instagram. I don't have Twitter. I deleted Facebook recently, but like I have to go on once in a while to look at Marketplace. I do have LinkedIn, you know.
Yeah, I think that's actually where we met like 10 years ago.
I'm not a big social media person.
Well, the blog is all you need, and I've read three of your articles now, and they're amazing. I will continue to read, and I will be a devoted fan. So yeah, awesome. I'm really glad you came on. It's nice to finally connect with you. We've been kind of inadvertently connecting for about a decade now, so it's cool to actually chat with you face to face. But yeah, thank you so much for your wealth of knowledge and all that. And everyone can find him at equity.guru. Go check him out, go read his blog and support.
Sweet. All right, thanks for having me.
Anytime. Thanks again for coming out. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks.
I thought this would be a good time to jump in and pretty please request that you like, comment, and subscribe and all that fun stuff if you can. It really helps out with the algorithm and it'll help me keeping this podcast going. And yeah, that's about it. Thanks so much.